ICAR, which deals with contact phenomenon. ICAR is now well established with thousands of members all over the world in 11 countries. Its investigators have examined over 5,000 cases of extraterrestrial contact, including abductions. But he's also an internet radio pioneer with a very substantial presence on the web, including a number of programs on the Paranormal Radio Network.
One of the unanswered questions about the exopolitical future is to what degree contactees, whatever the nature of their individual experience, will come together as a political force to petition their interests and concerns. Should that happen, it is very likely our speaker will be in the center of that process. And I should mention that his work is done in concert with his wife, Linda, who contributes greatly to all of this, and I've dealt with her many times and been on many of his shows, and he has multiple shows. It's really cool. So please welcome to X Conference 2009, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone. Can y'all hear me okay?
I'll tell you what.
How about now? Yeah, there we go. That sounds a little better. My name is Joe Montaldo. I am International Director for the International Community for Alien Research. I was one of the co-founders about 11 years ago. It was an organization founded simply for the fact that there's no real experiencer-based organizations in ufology today. So we decided, because there was no real information on this at all, that we would go ahead and start the new organization. We started out with probably 8 members. Most of them MUFON members, by the way, which has actually helped us out quite a bit. Today, we are 15,000 plus members. We are the largest UFO abduction organization on the face of the planet, and we have investigated more than 13,000 abduction cases. We have been doing this nonstop now for, well, I have personally been in the field for 28 years. We have been doing, ICAR has been doing it nonstop now for 11 years. One of the things about the organization is we established abduction criteria. This is really important for what we're going to be talking about this evening, for the simple fact of the matter is along the lines of establishing abduction criteria, we learned that there was military or re-abduction cases going on. Ow. Okay, but anyway, we learned that there were several of these military abduction cases going on. While this was all going on, we decided that we would go ahead and finish the abduction criteria out for the greys, the reptilians, the human, and so on and so forth. We also decided that we would... sorry, guys, I don't know why it's doing that. Yeah, I can hold it closer. Yeah, that's not a problem. We also decided that we would go ahead and set up military abduction criteria. This is important for the fact that some of the people I'll be talking to about this evening, along with Leah Haley, Melinda Leslie, Katarina Wilson, and a few others, including Betty and Barney Hill, are actually military abductees. They started out as alien abductees, but along the line, they became military abductions. They all share a couple of things in common. One is that they all were alien abductees. That's what they started out as, or I should say contactees in their case, because they're completely fully functional, completely aware of what has happened to them and the different contacts that's been going on. In Katarina Wilson's case, she's a very interesting person. We call her a communicator for the fact that she speaks publicly about this on a regular basis. So does Leah Haley and Melinda Leslie. Another thing that's interesting about these people, including myself, is we've all had experiences in Gulf Breeze, Florida. None of us knew each other. Until recently, we didn't even know that any of us had had any experiences in Gulf Breeze, Florida. It's a very... Yeah, yeah, okay. Like that? Yeah, okay. All right. No. We'll get it straight one way or another. But anyway, to make a long story short, we found out along the line that several of these people were having military experiences. What I'm going to do for you this evening is, in Katarina Wilson's case and Melinda Leslie's, I will let you hear it in their own voice. It'll make it a little easier. Besides, they have a better voice than I do anyway, so y'all should enjoy it more. Let me find the clip for you, and we'll go from there. I got to say, it's for me, it's a little different because I do host UFO Undercover, and I own the Paranormal Radio Network, so it gives us a unique resource. And the fact that, okay, where did it go? Not good, guys. Nah, we didn't want that either. All right, why isn't the bar coming up? Okay, maybe not. For some reason, the title bar isn't coming up. Hey, guys, what's up? Nah, I find that interesting, too. Well, I was going to play y'all some audio clips, but maybe not. Because apparently they're not coming back up on the computer. Let's see. Maybe we can do it that way. And let's see. Yeah, there we go. That'll work. This first clip is Katarina Wilson. We're going to cue it up right quick.
They wrote it in the virtual auditorium. It says, it says, when do you realize, okay, it says, when did she realize there was military involvement in her abduction?
Okay.
We're going to talk about MILAB. They're going to turn the radio off tonight.
Well, let's see. This started happening pretty early. You know, actually, that was the reason I decided to publish my journal. I went to my first MUFON symposium was in 1992. And I've had seen military people, and I've been in these underground bases, and nobody was talking about this stuff. And it kind of, not to use a pun, but it really made me feel alienated. And, this is a while back, And I had all this information. I've been approached by two MUFON investigators. You gotta write a book.
Yeah.
And, I've been putting it off.
I didn't want to do it.
The last thing in the world I'm going to do. I went to the symposium, and nobody would really talk about this. And the time it took me to write my book, Leah Haley's book came out. And I didn't even know who she was. And then the next year I finished mine and had it published. And then Carla Turner.
Yeah.
And then wham, 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 here's the military angle. And then, other researchers had to look at it and say, okay, we know these people, they're not nuts. And so it met with a lot of resistance. But I realized it pretty early on. I don't know the exact date, but I today know that when I was in my early 20s and married to my first husband, he was a Marine Corps pilot. I had experience then that it's in this latest book, and it was just incredible. I mean, it was totally terrestrial, no aliens. This was a abandoned military base hospital. There were three or four other female abductees with me. I knew the military guy that I saw. I called him by name. He was a major. It was just very, very detailed, and I didn't. It took me a while to remember it, but it just spontaneously came back one day and it just blew me away because it all made sense. And I think for me it was the proximity that I was living near one of the largest Marine Corps bases, in the country. I was an abductee. It was like, well, let's get her and talk to her, but these other women, young women that were with me, I think it was like 22, maybe 21 at the time. These other women that were with me, we knew each other, we knew who we were, and we'd been there before. So it was just shocking. And it took me a long time to deal with it. I wrote Project Open Mind, which is a 10-part monograph that deals with my exploration into that part of the phenomenon. And it's also on the site. You can read it for free. But it kind of blew me away, the technology that we have.
I'm going to stop her right there. That's Katarina Wilson. Both of y'all should be familiar with her. She's alienjigsaw.com if you want to check it out. Also, the audio is on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.org site if you want to listen to the entire two-hour interview. The reason I want to play them is because it's easier for you to hear it in their voices. You can obviously tell she is talking about a military abduction. Katarina Wilson is, along with Leah Haley, both started out as alien contactees. As far as they were concerned, that was the only thing going on in their lives. They were having alien contact, and there wasn't nothing else going on. Somewhere along the line, they both woke up, mainly because it happened in Gulf Breeze, Florida. They had realized they had a military abduction experience. Basically, the military seems to have an interest, especially in what we call communicators, things like that. Leah Haley, Katarina Wilson, Melinda Leslie, a few others, are public speakers. They speak all the time about this. And for the government, for lack of a better word, it's like one-stop shopping. They've heard them on the show, on my shows, on Coast to Coast, on many other shows, talking about this very thing. And it makes it easier. They don't have to go out and randomly abduct people anymore. They can simply go, okay, we'll listen to one of these shows, find someone who is been working, been a known abductee and military abductee. Now, what's interesting about this is the military abductions really only tend to happen to very advanced contactees. There are a few out there that we're not sure how they found them. We know that the aliens track through DNA, but we don't know how the government picks who they're going to abduct, other than the ones that are famous. We know the ones that are famous, it's because they're in the limelight and it's easy to find out who they are, and they can hear pretty much, you know, on, like this audio clip. The government could sit down and listen to all 2 hours, and actually in Katarina's case, there's about 10 hours on my particular show. They can listen to all of that. They can bring her in and do whatever they feel like they need to do to find out what information she knows. She's a very advanced contactee. Along with Leah Haley and Melinda Leslie, they're all very advanced contactees. They have about 75% recollection of what's happened to them in their abductions. They've all messed or interfaced with different types of extraterrestrial technology. So for the government, this is something they're looking for. And what most people don't understand about, and I use the government word loosely, because really and truly, what we have here is not a military organization, and it's not Obama's, you know, people out there abducting these people. This is some group that has political ties and military ties. They're very well funded. I would imagine it's private. I do not think the government is actually paying for this. Because of some of the things that goes on, it does seem that this is a private funded type deal. It's interesting to me because here you have a long line of famous contactees that are now being abducted by the military. Now, in Katarina Wilson's case, it started earlier, about 22 or 23 years. I think she was about 22 or 23 years old the first time. And then it was much later in life. In her case, it may be because she was married to a Marine Corps. They made a head, and he might have been talking to someone, and they may have been made aware that she was a military abductee. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because when we move on to Betty and Barney Hill, I'm establishing a line here on how Betty and Barney Hill may also be military abductees. In Melinda Leslie's case, which is a very good friend of mine, and I enjoy talking to her immensely, she just woke up one day and realized that she had been having military abduction experiences, some of the stuff that just did not pan out to be anything alien-related. And like I was saying earlier, we have what we call abduction criteria. In the military's case, we're looking for terrestrial-based technologies. Basically, what I'm saying here is the aliens tend to, well, they'll come in, just take you out of house, beam you. There seems to be unlimited technology there. They'll float you across the floors. Most of the experiments done on board the different ships entail technology so far behind us, we really don't understand them. In the military abduction cases, that is not true. We understand these technologies quite well. We understand the use of drugs and hypnosis to get the information out of different individuals. This is regularly common amongst military abductees. You will see quite often that they'll be talking about it. We call it passive scanning, for lack of a better term for it. It's a form of hypnosis, but it's not a hypnosis that takes them that deep. They want to bring them to a specific level that they're still useful. If they drug them too much or bring them down too much, they don't become useful anymore. There's no way for them to use their psychic abilities or explain some of the technologies they may have interfaced with on different craft. For the government, I really think the government is looking more along for the alien agenda lines than they are anything else. As far as technologies go, I think the government has a good functional idea of what kind of technologies guys possess. I don't think we possess it, but I do think the government has a good idea of what types of technologies aliens possess to some extent. I really think they're looking more for the alien agenda, and the reason why is when we talk to these different MILABs or REABs, we've noticed that they're asking the same questions we are. What are you doing here? What do you want? What's going on? How come are you here? Why are you taking our citizens? This is the same questions the government's asking. They do talk to them about technologies, and they try to learn about different interfaces because, in the greatest case, the technology seems to be psychically controlled. There doesn't seem to be any physical instrumentation involved with the Gray. So that would be a vast step for us. And if most of y'all are familiar with the F-22 Raptor, one of the Marine types is doing away with the joystick, and they actually have a little strap that goes on your head, and that's how they're going to fly this plane. There's big advantages to this. Let's be honest. I mean, technologically wise, if you're turning an aircraft with a joystick, you have to think, turn an aircraft with a joystick. If you're not using a joystick and using strictly mind control, it's instant. So it's going to give you a big advantage over the Russians or the Chinese or whoever we may be encountering at the time. I find that really fascinating that they're actually working on these technologies, and there does seem to be that our government does possess some knowledge about these technologies. You can see it in some of our own technologies. But they still don't know why the aliens are here. what do the aliens want with us per se? Now, if you take the stance that they've been here 50 years, you can say they're just here to learn. But if you use the Sumerians or the Egyptians, you'll realize that they've been here much longer than that, 6,000-10,000 years at least. So what is it that they're trying to do? If they were here to conquer the planet, let's be honest, 6,000 years ago, it would have been much easier to conquer Earth. What would you throw? Spears on them? Come on, let's throw a spear at this flying saucer. Oh, well, they could have easily conquered the planet. If they were here to enlighten us, like a lot of my friends from Sedona tell me, they would have already done it. It would have been much easier to start to enlighten our population 6,000 years ago, because today, in general, we're pretty arrogant, we're pretty set in our ways, and we pretty much believe what we think is right. Regardless if it is or not, most humans think that our way is the right way. Unfortunately, we're not familiar with the rest of the universe and what our neighbors may or may not think. But we do think that way. So it's much harder to try to change opinions and ideas and minds and even religious sets into, say, society. So you can pretty much rule out that they're here to conquer us or to enlighten. So then what does that leave you? What are the extraterrestrials actually here for? Well, the government's looking, we're looking. Having more than 12,000, 13,000 cases, we have a big advantage over the government. But, of course, they're pervy to everything we are. I'll give you an example. For about 5 years, I used to host a show called Wake Up USA. We have a little transmitter button that sits on our equipment that lets us know if we have an open line. It just glows red. I have never done a show in 7 years that light is not on. That means there is an outside source listening to it. We have videotaped it so people could see it for themselves. We have never, to this point, done a show when it's not on. Now, at first I was a little paranoid. I said, oh, God, they're listening to me. Why would they possibly want to listen to me? Well, Paranormal Radio Network hosts about 26 shows now. It does not matter what show is on, that red light is on. They are interested in everything that everybody is saying. And like a couple of my friends in ufology pointed out to me, it's one-stop shopping. We have anybody who's anybody on the network in ufology, and every major contactee and several that aren't major have been on the different shows on the network. So you can really come and sit and listen, and they can call in themselves. They can come into one of the virtual auditoriums, or they can call in on one of the toll-free numbers and say, hey, I would like to ask this question. So they're actually getting a prelude. They're setting up the contactee long before they're picking them up. And part of that is on us, and I was talking to Yvonne Smith a few weeks ago about this very thing when I had told her on the air. I thought that because these people were out in the general public, that it was making it easier for the government to abduct them. Now, I don't want to scare any future contactees that might come forward, because we need all of y'all to come forward, but just know there may be some recourse if you happen to get into the general public and start speaking about this. It's not so much your friends and family are going to ridicule you or you're going to lose your job. In today's society, that seems to be starting to fade away. But if you are a very advanced contactee, and you do have, say, if you're in the keeper category, then you're going to probably have a military abduction experience. And they really do think that they can do whatever they want without any recourse whatsoever. It's one of those things that I have to wonder about. That's how I know it's not Obama's government, and that's how I know it's not the military. The Air Force would worry about repercussion. The regular government would worry about repercussions. These people do not think there's any repercussions. They're not even scared. They're not even a little bit worried. They will take you from your home. They will take you from your car. They will take you from work. They will take you in front of other people. They just don't care. And another thing I find interesting, a lot of times when they put you back, they leave the memories intact. So you've gone through this experience, which most people would consider to be harrowing at least, and it's still in your head. At least the aliens a lot of times block it out, especially the young stuff. They tend to block out a lot. The government, really, unless you're a newbie, they're not going to block it out. They want you to remember. And sometimes I even wonder if they want people to talk about it, because recently, along with Kat and Lee and Melinda, there's been quite a few other people that have come forward that have started talking about this, and there doesn't seem to be any repercussions for them other than being picked up, which is going to happen regardless. So I just found that interesting that they're moving along that line. Now, I'll tell you what, let's play Melinda Leslie's clip right quick.
One of them was specifically spoke at a MUFON in Minnesota and had a guy on the board of MUFON come up to me afterwards, ask me a bunch of questions about the medical procedure that I had gone through. He tried to, he told me later, he tried to bleed me. He said I answered very truthfully, very factually about a procedure that he performed. And he said the procedure that I had done on me was a very early abortion procedure. So in that case, and in the end of that experience, there were aliens involved, where I was at the end of the experience, was handed over to aliens, and the aliens actually were the ones that brought me back home. But the whole rest of the experience was very much in the hands of the military, and it involved this gynecological procedure that I believe was an early term abortion procedure. I had no knowledge of being pregnant at the time, but I had a bunch of really weird period stuff before that and after that. In fact, that was one of the things that this doctor said I passed his test with, all the after stuff I had happened was normal for having had been through that. And according to him, he says he performed this procedure, and I forget the name of it, but it was an early term abortion procedure. So in that case, I think they were taking, I might have had misformed alien-related material,
now, I want to stop her there for a second. She used the word hybrid, and this is an interesting thing we found in quite a few cases. If y'all have ever heard Barney describe one of the things he's seen aboard the spacecraft, he talks about an Irishman, red-headed, white-skinned Irishman. What's interesting about this is in Leah Haley's case, Katerina Wilson's case, and about, I think we have more than 500 listed today, this red-headed, we like to call him the red-headed doctor, whether he's a doctor or not, I honestly don't know. Reason we say that is because in the Gulf Breeze cases and in some of the UK cases, he's in scrubs. Sometimes it's green scrubs, sometimes it's blue scrubs, but he's in scrubs. Most people describe him around 6.5 to 7 feet tall. And they give his facial features and skin color about the same description. But his hair, for some reason, is a burnt orange, and they all agree on the color, but it's always a different hairstyle. Now, I'm trying to think that this is a different part. I really am, because if it's not, this guy is really busy, guys. I mean, he's all over the planet, and you got to wonder, how is he doing this? But sometimes they describe it as kind of tight curl, sometimes kinky, sometimes flowing, sometimes wavy. And I'm not sure what it means. I mean, at this point, we're just guesstimating. But I will tell you this. Most of the contactees agree that he's a hybrid. And he's overseeing whatever the military is doing. For whatever reason, I guess the aliens don't quite trust the government that's working on these experiments. And anyway, I don't think they actually trust him, so they're overseeing it. And sometimes you will find in these military abductions there will be grays present. A lot of times in the cases down in Gulf Breeze and some of the cases out in California and even some of the cases on the East Coast we have, the grays will sometimes be present. And one of the things we found out is the grays are usually present when they abduct what we call a keeper. I'm sure a lot of y'all are familiar with it. Keeper is a term we use for abductees that are very, very advanced. They're usually people who are actually working for the grays. They tend to help bring in people. They tend to help steady the people when they're on board the ship. They move around. They work with them on a regular basis. And they're allowed to remember about 75% of what goes on board the ship. They are a wealth of information. They're also one of the groups we use to program people. Mir Labs or contactees, we actually pre-program them sometimes 10 to 20 at a time. We will sit down with a group of people, program a list of questions, and then send them for the next time they get abduction. It will be automatic. They will just automatically, telepathically ask the grays or whatever alien race this may be these questions. Now, what I found interesting about this is a lot of times the grays will answer without thinking about it, and they'll even act like proud parents, like, oh, look what my contactee did, or my pet, whatever you want to call him. But then sometimes, as Jim Sparks and Katerina Wilson will contest to, that there are penalties for this. The grays don't physically hurt you, per se, as they have a good way of mentally, let's just say, they can mentally beat the daylights out of you. It's a very interesting way they do it. But I can tell you this, you won't make the mistake twice. It's not going to happen. You're just not going to make this mistake two times. When they're done with you, you will not make it again. Most of the time, the grays seem to be quite willing to let this go. And the reptilians and the humans do too. It's not like they don't want the contactees to have the information. It's more like It's more like they want you to handle, have what you can handle. And one of the things we learned early on is we have the abductees who usually don't know much. Most of the time, they're not even self-aware of what's going on. And the contactees are usually aware and even to an extent accepting what's happening to them. And even sometimes even working along with the Grays or working along with some of the other researchers. The keepers are, like I said, they're much more important. They tend to have way more information. And it also tends to run in age groups. If you've ever met an abductee, because these are lifetime's experiences, not like Travis Walton, who was unfortunately in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was a one-timer. They tend to abduct in family lines. So if you happen to be a military abductee and they're abducting your mother, it's a good chance they're going to come abduct your children later on, just like the aliens are going to do it. Most people don't realize, you know, people ask me all the time, when do abductions start? They start pre-birth. You're still in your mother's womb. She's an abductee. They're taking you. And you're from that point forward. So it's important for us to establish these lines of criteria so that we can actually have something to go by when we're deciding who's a contactee and who is a military abductee or anywhere in between. The rehab thing was actually coined by Melinda Leslie and Tim Banal. She was on a show one day, and they got talking about this very subject, military abductions. And we're trying to change the word mainly because this isn't military. This is some covert organization that is independently working this on their own. The amount of information they're collecting has to be amazing because, like I said, we've got 500-plus cases out of, like, 12,000. So, and I've talked to several other researchers, with the exception of David Jacobs. Everybody else agrees that it's probably, if you have 100, it's probably 10. So we'll say 10% of the contactees are actually being re-abducted and different experiments being run on them. And like I said earlier, they're mainly looking for the alien agenda. Now, the reason I brought all this up early on is I wanted to talk about Betty and Barney Hill. If anybody's ever heard me on Coast to Coast, they've actually heard this discussion I had with George Norrie about Betty and Barney Hill. It was funny because he told me on the air that I would never change his opinion about the Hills. And, of course, I laughed at him and I said, well, we'll see what happens. At the end of the interview, he was speechless. Now, I know most of y'all are familiar with George Norrie, and if you've ever heard him speechless, that's a first for me. I have never heard the man speechless. And in the 10 years I've been listening to him, I have never heard him ever speechless. The reason why is, in the Hills case, most people aren't familiar with this, but while they were in Canada, they lost a whole day. They have no idea what hotel they stayed at, where they had breakfast, or anything else for that memory. Now, what else is funny about it is Barney could remember stuff like how many black people were standing on the street. Or he could remember stuff like he remembered talking to two policemen. Betty remembers not talking to any policemen. This is common in an alien abduction. These are cover memories. They basically what happened is they were abducted somewhere along the line in Canada. They lost an entire day. They don't know where the day went. They, like I said, they did not know where they were staying. Now, I've had some pretty wild nights. I'm from New Orleans and Mardi Gras, and I've always managed to remember what hotel I stayed at. I'm sorry, I always have. And I've always usually could remember where I was that morning having breakfast or things like that. Now, Betty and Barney are intelligent people, so I take issue when they tell me they could not remember what hotel they stayed at. I mean, obviously, you had to pay for the thing to get in there. Now, they left that morning, and then their descriptions of what happened are split. They give two entirely different descriptions of what happened that day in Canada. Now, there's no way that could happen unless these memories are false. I mean, if they were both in the same car riding along the same road, they should remember the same things. But when you sit down and compare the memories, you're going to find out that they don't. Now, to be honest with you, all of this data comes from the two books, the one Kathleen Marjoram did, the book, and the regression tapes. I actually have the regression tapes. I was going to play some of the regression tapes for y'all today, but Barney, in a couple of places, gets rather upset, and I didn't know how the audience would handle that, so I decided not to, but there's obviously some big problems with this case. When you get into the United States, into New Hampshire, the first thing they tell you about is being pulled over on the side of the road and four people walking up to them. Now, I've been studying abductions, like I said, for 28 years, and no time in any abduction have I had did the aliens get on the side of the road, flag you down with flags, and take you from your car. Now, in the military abductions, I have had that happen on numerous occasions, but not on the alien abductions. And the only case I've ever had where someone was physically dragged to a ship was in Gulf Breeze, Florida, and that was /alien/military. The thing about it is a lot of what they're talking about is terrestrial-based technologies. They're talking about the needle in the stomach. That is terrestrial. That is not extraterrestrial. The Greys have a much more sophisticated way of seeing what's in your stomach. They don't need to do that. It is not a technology they need to use. Also, if you listened to what Betty was saying and Barney was saying, they describe a hospital room. They do not describe the inside of an alien craft. They describe what anybody in this room would consider a hospital room. The exam itself, they took skin samples, hair samples, nail samples, and several other samples besides that, none of which the Greys would do in any shape or form. The Greys will not physically scrape you with a razor blade and take a sample. They will not physically come in and pull your hair. That is not how they do things. And neither will the reptilian humans. Their technologies is far in advance of ours, and they do not need those type of technologies. Now, if you've ever watched what the U.S. government does when there's like radiation contamination, or any type of contamination for that matter, what I just described is what they do. They will come in and take you, and they will do several different skin samples, hair samples, nail samples, blood samples to see if you've been contaminated. That's exactly what happened in the Betty and Barney Hill case. And it's not just that. I mean, they describe, somebody told me about, the map was holographic and digital. Well, that's not true. In regression, she describes the map as a, he took the map out of a drawer and pulled it down. This is terrestrial technology. I have never heard of any alien race with a rolled-up map in a drawer, ever. It's like the physical book. There is, as far as I know, none of the races ever talk about a physical paperback book. These are things that would definitely fall into the terrestrial technology categories. And so, you know, when I started reading this, I got a little upset because I was thinking, you know, I understand way back when that they didn't have the technology we do today, and the research, there wasn't as much research about alien abductions or MILAB, so I could see where they could have messed up. What I don't understand, and I'll be blunt about this, is why I'm on a stage 40 years later correcting this case. This should have been done years ago. I mean, it is obvious that this was not an alien abduction in New Hampshire. And somebody got mad at me a couple weeks ago and said, well, Joe, you're saying the Hills aren't abducted. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying in order to be a military abductee, you have to be an alien contactee. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about that. So what I am saying is the Hills were abducted in Canada. When they re-entered the United States the following day, Uncle Sam said, well, guess what, guys? We're going to give you a little cleanup. Now, there's a lot more evidence that goes along with this because, I found it interesting that a couple of places in the book, when they're actually talking about statements and a few other things that are going on, I'll tell you what, let me find it right here quick, because I even wrote the page numbers down to make it a little easier for everybody who would like to check it out. I was saying they describe it as a hospital room, metal chairs, you know, they bright blue light, tiled floors, things like that. Now, I've never heard that on a craft anywhere. I was kind of like, okay, that's on page 119, actually. And, these kind of things, and then we were just talking about the map, that's also there. And then it says, you know, there was a statement she made when they actually were out by the car that always did bother me. He basically told Betty, well, just come on, you might as well get this over with so you can get back in your car and go home. All right, guys. I've been an abduction researcher for 25 years, 28 years. I have never heard a Gray tell that to anybody. The Gray could care less what you think. He's got you. He's going to do what he wants to you, and then he's going to put you back. He's not going to care about your little feelings or anything else. A human, on the other hand, would care about, you know, did he hurt your feelings, especially if this was a first-timer. You know, for me, Betty and Barney Hill are probably the first military abduction ever recorded. It's just a shame it took us 40 years to realize that it was a military abduction. And it's an important case because it establishes a line. It establishes an alien abduction in Canada, and it establishes a military abduction inside the United States 40 years ago. So, you know, this tells you how long our government, and back then I would say our government, was monitoring this. Some of the other things I found interesting, like one of her best friends, the guy who actually brought this to the public, was Air Force retired CIA. They were completely and utterly sound. Their two roommates were Air Force. One of them was Air Force CIA. Most of their friends were Air Force. There's just entirely too much Air Force interference in their lives and too much terrestrial technologies to assume this was an alien abduction. And what bothers me about it is was it intentionally misguided case? Were we intentionally being misled, or was the investigator who did the work just not paying attention? Now, I know back then there was no military abductions on file, but when you start talking about the amount of Air Force personnel in the Hills' lives, somebody should have took notice and said, wait a minute. anytime you have friends with NSA and CIA people, you should be taking notice. That would be like I said, well, I'm an alien abductee, but you know what? My two best friends are CIA. Well, come on. Y'all going to think right off the bat there's something going on here. We're not being honest. There's just some BS going on here. So, and, you know, I really like the Hill case, but I did feel the need to correct it. And it is a military abduction case, and it's an important military abduction case because, like I said earlier, it establishes a line for people to actually go back and look and see. This is when the military abductions may have started. They may have started early in that. Now, I'm not going to say that was the very first. As far as I can see from the evidence we have today, it was the first abduction case, the first military abduction case. Now, there's another thing about the Hills case that bothered me, too. The first hypnotherapist said that he did not want to rehypnotize him because he had felt like that there was a memory block, a memory cap put on the Hills by hypnosis. The aliens do not use hypnosis to change your memories. They have a much more sophisticated way of doing it. And even today, the military abductions are quite more sophisticated than that. But back 40 years ago, would make perfect sense to me is that's how they redid a thing. One of the other problems, and to help the investigator in this case, one of the other problems was is being that they were abducted in Canada and military abducted in the United States, there was two sets of memories. Anybody familiar with the case knows that Barney and Betty had three sets of memories. They had what they remembered in their dreams, what was recovered in hypnosis, and what they actually remembered while they were awake. By the way, none of those three match. None of them. The regression does not match the dreams. The dream does not match the physical memory. So right there, they should have took circumstance. They should have said, oh, wait a minute. Wait, none of this stuff matches. There's a problem here. What is the problem? Why doesn't these memories and these dreams and these hypnosis coincide with each other? Simply for the fact that the aliens, you know, covered up the memories. There was little bits and pieces bleeding through. That's probably why they thought when they were picked up in New Hampshire that it was aliens. Because they were probably still reeling from the alien abduction that had just happened probably, what, 16, 18 hours earlier. So I kind of feel for them in that fact, and I kind of feel for the fact that that the case was misdiagnosed because for the researchers back in the day, it would have really helped the younger researchers coming up today to have this evidence and have this information because we would have established a long time ago about the military abductions, and we may have actually caught on to something. Today they've gotten much more sophisticated, so it's highly unlikely that we're going to catch the government doing this. In the 60s, we might have had a chance to catch them. They weren't very sophisticated. They were kind of sloppy, like, let's pull them over on the side of the road and take them off and drag them across the street. Somebody could have seen that. And if we knew that's how they were doing it, there was a good chance that you could have watched for roadblocks and things like that. Or you could have been listening on radios or scanners or things like that and found out when there was a block and actually maybe got involved in a case, which I wouldn't recommend, but still, there would have been a better chance of catching them. Today, the way they do it today is much more sophisticated. They do use drugs, and they do use passive scanning. It's not so much hypnosis as what they've done over the years. In order to be a contactee or an abductee, it's one of the requirements, one of the abduction criteria is that you're either empathic or telepathic. We have never met an abductee or contactee that does not possess at least one of these abilities. All contactees are empathic. They send and receive motions on a regular basis. It gets rather confusing for some of them because if you've ever met a contactee, sometimes for no reason they'll be standing there and they'll get really emotional. Well, when you sense other people's emotions, a lot of times you just sense it. It would be like if I was standing up here and got mad and everybody in the audience got mad at the same time. It was because I was receiving or sending those emotions. Or if all of a sudden I broke out in tears because one of y'all here were having a bad day or couldn't or had just something miserable happen. So it is one of the criteria we do look for. Now, the government realized early on that this could be used. This could be used for passive scanning. They can actually put memories in, or actually, the way they really do it is they give you this drug. It's actually a cocktail, from what I've been told. It's four or five drugs combined. They give you this drug, and then they passive scan you. And the passive scan usually is very suggestive in the form that they're asking you, what happened to you last night, Jane? We know you were abducted. We know that these aliens picked you up around this time. Now, what we're wanting to know is what happened on the ship. What kind of procedures did you actually experience while on the ship? And then, of course, if it's done right, the contactee will spill their guts. Now, one of the things we learned, too, is the keepers, fortunately, aren't quite as easy to get over. And sometimes the aliens will intervene in a military abduction. They will actually stop the abduction. From what we've learned in Gulf Breeze, from several mass abductions that we've been privy to be dealing with, We have seen in a couple of times where the grays will actually intervene on the behalf of the contactees. And I gotta be honest, I don't think it's so much because the government is hurting the contactees is that they may learn something they're not supposed to. A lot of these contactees are very, very advanced and possess a wide range of knowledge. So I really do think in a lot of these cases that the grays just said, okay, look, you know, this particular contactee knows she may have used a teacher on board the craft, or they may have seen the engines, or maybe even been allowed to kind of guide the ship as navigation or something with their telepathic abilities. And, of course, our government is interested in these kind of things. They are phenomenally interested in these kind of things. So every now and then, the grays will intervene. They'll just basically slap them on the hand and say, that's enough, and we're taking them. And the reason I bring that up is because in Gulf Breeze, and this has happened more times than I even care to talk about, we have had mass military abductions in Gulf Breeze. I personally was privy to be in one along with my wife. There was, I think, 100 and something people in that particular case. There was another case when we were down there with about 18 people when we witnessed about 200 people being taken on the beach. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. They were filing out of the hotel. I mean, just a lot of them. I thought there was like a party going on the beach or something. I really did. I mean, I'm standing there going, oh, look at all these people, man. What the hell are they doing? So they're piling out. It looked like there was a ship on the beach. Looked like there was a, actually, it looked like an ocean liner. It was one of the damnedest things I've ever seen. When we made the turn and looked at it, I was thinking, well, that looks like an ocean liner. Well, after watching it for about 3 minutes, it kind of manifested itself into what I would call a saucer. But it was a more like a what we call a, I don't know if y'all are familiar with the TR-3Bs, the black flying triangles. It's really what it ended up being. After we sat there and watched it for a few minutes, that's what it ended up being. I would imagine they took about 200 people that day. They took them for quite some time, did whatever they were going to do, and put them back. And we didn't actually get abducted. We just watched it. And there were several other people there that watched it. There's something special about Gulf Breeze and the fact that anybody in this room, matter of fact, if you go spend a week, 10 days down there, odds are you're going to see an abduction or you're going to be part of an abduction. Gulf Breeze is a mecca. People go down there all the time and call us, and they'll go spend 10 days down there and have 1 day of bills. And you're thinking, okay, they check into the hotel Sunday. They check out the hotel the following Sunday. Okay, 7 days. Should have all kind of receipts, cards, all the food, you know. I'll give you a case recently we were working. It was a husband, wife, and four children. They flew down from New York. They were spending, I was about 10 days down there. They called me up on the phone and said, Joe, you know, I was going over my credit card receipts, and I've got 1.5 days of bills. I'm like, okay, so you only got 1.5 days of bills, big deal. Oh, but Joe, I was in Florida for 10 days. Now, on the hotel video, they have them checking into the hotel. On the video, you never see them leave until the day they leave to go home. Now, it's all been witnessed. It's all documented. Not one time, as far as the hotel is concerned, did they leave. Now, there's no hotel room receipts. There's no bills for like room service or anything like that. There's no phone calls outside of the room. So basically what is being told to me is these people locked up in a hotel room for 9.5 days and didn't come out with no food, no water, no nothing. Now, I'm not buying that. Under regression, it turns out to be something quite different. They were actually picked up, brought to an underground facility in Eglin Air Force Base, held there for I think it was 8.5 days, with several different experiences being done to them. Now, I don't know how many of y'all are brave. Eglin Air Force Base is the United States non-nuclear testing facility. It is 784 square miles, and it is one of the largest bases in the United States, and it tests everything non-nuclear, everything. It's also a big mecca for TRs. You see them down there quite often flying around. The reason I bring this up is on Navarre Beach, you can get right up to the Eglin fence. If you walk down that fence about 1.25 miles, you're going to see a little white building. And right next to the little white building, it's still there today, and they let you, by the way, they let you walk on the beach there. They have no, they don't even care. You walk down the beach, it's about 1.25 miles, and you look to the left, you're going to see this house. And if you look right on the right side of the house, you're going to see a set of stairs going straight down. Now, stupid me decided one night I'm going to go look and see what's down the stairs. Bad idea. I've got to tell you, it was a bad idea. I really don't remember much of what happened, but when you first look down the stairs, you can see they're going down 200, 300, maybe 400 feet. They're just on an angle going straight down. It's an interesting thing, and I'm not the only one that's seen them. There's been several other contactees and several other witnesses to this, which was very interesting. The night we got taken, my wife, my son, and myself, it was interesting. And this is one of the things that got me involved in this. We were on vacation in Gulf Breeze, Florida. This is about 16 years ago, and I wasn't going to tell a story tonight, but I'm going to. We were down in Gulf Breeze, and we went down to do a little sky watching, nothing else. We weren't really even into ufology. I just met Walt Anders and had barely, you know, we were barely working and doing a little sighting work for about 5 years. And maybe about 7 years. But we get down there. We're out on the beach, just me and my wife and my son, behind this little hotel, which doesn't exist anymore. Hurricane Opal destroyed it. And we walk outside, and we're sitting there. And Linda tells me, you see that in the water. It was a white light in the water. Well, actually, it was a green light. And there was a pier that went out about 75 yards, and there was two guys on the pier. And we were watching this green light bob up and down in the water. No big deal. Somebody might have took one of them little light sticks and broke it and threw it in the water. We didn't think nothing else of it. All of a sudden, these two guys start screaming and just start running like you wouldn't believe down the pier. I'm like, well, what are these guys on? They're on some kind of drugs. At that very moment, there was like, it's hard to describe, it was like a white light coming out of the Gulf of Mexico. It looked like a door opening off the beach. Next thing I knew, there was two guys in black uniforms, which, by the way, is interesting because Betty and Barney, Betty describes them, black pants, black shirt, scarf, and a duck-billed cap, black duck-billed cap. I've never heard an alien ever wear this particular outfit before. What I find interesting about that is that's the same description that I would have gave you with minus the scarf of the guys that looped their arms, because I got to say, I was quite hostile. I'm not a little guy, so when they were dragging my son and my wife off, I got very, very upset. By the way, we have full recollection of this completely. And I got extremely upset. Anyway, to make a long story short, they drug us down there. They brought us in. It's one of the things that got me on the redheaded doctor because when Linda was in the back, I had seen him. The whole entire time, I did not see my son. Really, really upset me. You know, he's like 2.5, not quite 3 years old, and I was really hot. And anyway, I see what they're doing to Linda. There's how would you describe it? It's like a round silver table or a round silver area, and there are seats that go all the way around it, and there's stirrups on it. And there was the guy, the redheaded guy that was about 6.5 foot tall in green scrubs, basically giving all these women what I would call an exam. And it was weird because while we were there, the two guys we seen running on the pier were actually behind this glass with I don't know, 50 or 60 other people. And I guess they were just waiting their turn, is the best way I could say it. It was a very horrific experience. There was a gray present that day. And I do remember when some of the women started getting very, very upset, the gray did intervene in the fact that enough is enough and that's it. And then I have to tell you, after that, the next thing I remember is sitting on the beach wondering what the blank, blank, blank just happened. We were back sitting on the beach by our hotel room. And there was a whole host of stuff that went on in there. And really, I'd get into it more, but it's really not pertaining to what we're doing tonight. But there was a lot of different things that went on that particular night. There was a lot of experiments we seen. This was all military abductee. Even though there was a gray present, this was all military. And they were looking for specific things. They wanted to know types of craft. They wanted to know types of equipment on the craft. They wanted to know how much we knew about the operations of the craft, how much of the gray's craft is physical instrumentation versus how much isn't. I can tell you, as far as I've seen, and any contact you have talked to, there is no physical instrumentation on a gray craft whatsoever. And I can tell you this, about 15 years ago, we started documenting alien abductions versus types of craft involved. To date, about almost 90% of all contactees we interview says that the grays use the saucer type. They also say that the reptilians use an elongated saucer, which is just a saucer that somebody grabbed and stretched out. And then that the humans use a large type triangle ship, probably like the ones that were seen out in Phoenix and a couple other places. They say they're 2, 3, 4 miles in size. Now, as far as I'm concerned, we can't build anything that big. Unless it's some kind of blimp, I'm not buying it's ours. The TRs, I understand fine. They're only about 60 yards across, and I can see us building something like that. And it's not just that. The TRs do tend to show up in places like Eglin Air Force Base. They show up in Colorado, and they also in Arizona and New Mexico and California, which are all testing areas. If anyone tracked the F-117s, back in the day, 20 years ago, in these areas I'm talking about, they were reported as UFOs. Now, we all know today they were the X-117. But back then, everybody was reporting them as triangled or V-shaped or wedge-shaped UFOs. And in today's society, we know that's not what they were. They were our technologies. Same thing with the TRs. They're showing up in the exact same places, which does suggest that it's our technology. Even though it's very advanced technology, it does suggest that it's ours. Now, the big ones, like the one we've seen in Tampa and the ones that other people have seen that are 2, 3, 4 miles, no, I can't. I've had many, many descriptions of things like they describe them as like 4 aircraft carriers long, 4 stacked, 4 aircraft carriers high. I served on the USS Nimitz. I just can't see it. I can't see us putting a Nimitz in the air, much less anything 4 times the size. That I just have to take issue with that. But it is one of the things we've been told. So and that's based on, at the time, it was based on about 7,000 cases. Now it's been updated. So we're like 12.5, 12.8 on our caseload now. And to be fair about this, when I say 12,000 cases, we're not talking about turned down cases. These are cases that meet ICAR's abduction criteria or military abduction criteria. These are not the amount of cases we've actually had come in. We've actually had quite a few more than that come in. In general, probably 2, maybe 3 out of 10 cases we get turn out to be abduction. The rest of them turn out to be something else. And there is a whole host of stuff you'd be surprised that people decide they're going to manifest alien or military abduction because some particular event happened in their life, like child molestation. We get probably 2 in 10 that that's what it is. When they're regressed, that's what you find. You don't find any alien contact there at all. And there's other things besides that. And I can't understand why you may want to think alien abduction over something like that. It doesn't always make sense, but it is there. And we just refer them, and I'll be honest, we refer them to psychologists because I'm not a psychologist. We do have a couple that work for the organization, but it's not me, so we just refer them. And we allow them to do with that themselves. Now, getting back to the Hills, under hypnosis, if you ever get a chance, y'all should all, if you ever get a chance to listen to the Betty and Barney hypnosis, you really should. It is really good. The guy did a good job regressing him in. By the way, he said himself he did not think any of this was alien-related. There was 3 therapists involved. They all said the same thing, that these were either cover memories, but none of them thought this was extraterrestrial. No time while Barney was alive did he ever say he was abducted by aliens. Not one time. Matter of fact, on numerous occasions, he made the statement that nobody, it was not a UFO, it was not aliens. He said it under regression, and he said it just while he was awake. So either he had a real need to lie about this, or he felt that Betty was leading him, which in his case, I agree, I think Betty was leading him. Betty was already prone to UFOs. Her sister had seen a sighting several years earlier, and she was really into it. And then there are her military friends. They kind of guided her along here. They kind of poked and prodded and oh, it's UFO, and let's go introduce you, and we're going to go out here and introduce you to some ufologists and other people like that. And it really does seem like, in the government's point, that they were guiding this case along. They needed this for whatever reason they were doing it, and so they made sure. It got blamed on the aliens when, in fact, it was a government. And I do understand our government and telling fibs. For some reason, they tend to do that a lot these days. I'm not sure why, but they do tend to do it a lot. I'm going to backtrack here a little bit to the rehab thing. It's important to understand the rehab because it does mean re-abduction. That's what it means. Usually what's going to happen is a contactee will be doing whatever. They may drive home from work. They may be at home. They may be having dinner with somebody, but they get abducted. The aliens do their regular routine that they do depending on what age they are because age has a lot to do with what experiments are run on a contactee. Age 5, there's nothing being going on. The worst stuff happens from puberty to about age 28, and there's some really nasty stuff that happens up in there. And we ask contactees all the time on the hypnosis, do you really want to remember this? Because there is no need to remember this information because, in general, it is some pretty nasty, nasty stuff. After that, it changes again. In their 30s, contact becomes much different. It becomes lighter. There's a lot less stuff going on. It's more about knowledge and information than it is about physical abduction and experiments, which tend to be done from puberty all the way up through 28. Now, for the military, they're looking at this going, okay, well, we know this lady has had 4 children. And we know that she is an advanced contactee that has advanced information. We also know that she has been talking to her children about this on a regular basis. She says, well, John, you know, we were abducted the other night and this, that, and the other thing happened and blah, blah, blah. And then she starts asking the children, what do they remember? Well, this is perfect for the government because children are much easier to get information out of than adults are. They're easier to intimidate, and they're easier to recover memories from. In my case, it's a little harder to intimidate me because I'm liable to punch back, which I have done on more than one occasion. Quite a few other military abductees have gotten quite upset about it and will fight back. It's not going to help you any. I'm not going to lie to you. They're still going to take you. The only difference is you're going to probably experience some pain for fighting back. And usually it's a very uncomfortable thing, but, you know, you get mad, you do it anyway. And so, but for children, it's much different. If you have a 10 or a 12-year-old child that's been regularly abducted, or maybe even, I know they tend to like teenagers better for some reason. Somebody 13, 14, 15 years old that has had experiences with a ship, maybe have used a teacher on board one of the craft or something, they're going to be much more easy to intimidate. The government's going to pick them up. They're going to have their parents with them. And we found this out early on. A lot of times what the government will do is say, well, if you don't cooperate, we're just going to take your mom out, or we're just going to take your dad out. And, of course, most kids at that point are going to cooperate fully without any problems at all. There's not going to be any argument about it. They're just going to give them the information and that's going to be done with it. Same thing for the parents. A lot of times the government will say, well, look, you can tell us what we're looking for or we'll do this to your child. Well, at that moment, I'm going to tell them whatever they want to know. So as most contactees that actually love their kids, they're going to tell them whatever they want to know, and that's just how it's going to go. So, you know, they have some nasty techniques they use. They don't always have to do that. A lot of times people are willing to help them out. And just tell them things that they think is important or pertinent to it. Some of the things, and we're honest with people, some of the things you can expect is if you're someone like Katarina Wilson or Leah Haley or Melinda Leslie or one of the ones like that, you can expect that you're abducted. And the usual stuff goes on. Government comes up. They come take you. They drug you up. They bring you in. They start probing you nonstop. Usually, they will do this for anywhere from 3 to 10 or 15 hours. They keep the person awake the entire time. They actually use stimulants to keep you awake. They get you to such a point that really and truly your mind is second-guessing everything that is going on around them. So what they do then is they hit you with a battery of questions, and it's nonstop. It's pretty much like standard military interrogation, not police interrogation, but a standard military interrogation. Anyone that's been in the military probably knows what I'm talking about. But it is pretty much a standard military interrogation, and it's nonstop. Then after they get to you to another point where I like to say like stage three, you're at this point you're so tired and so confused, and basically your mind is just a droop. They will introduce sometimes a piece of technology, something they may have retrieved somewhere, something that may have been given to them, and they will ask the contactee, "Can you make this work?" And on several occasions, the contactees have made this work. I find it interesting because for some reason, the government can't make it work without the contactee. Now, if it was just sheer psychic ability, I'm sure there's people out there that have psychic abilities that are not abducted. Now, I know that's an arguable point because a lot of researchers believe that only contactees possess psychic abilities. It's the reason, one of the reasons they're being chosen. May or may not be true. There is no evidence either way to suggest that, other than that, you know, all contactees are empathic. Other than that, there is no other evidence to suggest any more than that. But we do know that the government, for some reason, cannot just bring in Joe Blow off the street and get the technology to work. They need to get their hands on a contactee or an abductee to do it. As far as I know, and this isn't in blood by any means, most of the people that the government take are contactees. They really don't seem to mess with the abductees. And I'm thinking it's because the abductees doesn't know anything. They really don't. An abductee doesn't even know they've been abducted, much less what types of technologies are on board the ship, what they may or may not seen or anything along those lines, because the memories just aren't there. They've been covered up or looped up or put in there. Now, there's another thing I wonder about sometimes, something we found out about a dozen years ago. If y'all have noticed the lack of missing case times or lack of missing time cases in the last 10 years. Now, if you go back into the 80s and 70s, you will find a ton of cases to where there's missing time. You get into the
early to mid-90s, you don't really find them anymore. On average, we get maybe two cases a year where there's missing time. Now, we know the abductions are still going on, so what's changed? Well, what is going on here that's changed? Well, we learned, thanks to several people, there seems to be a new way that they do things. When I was talking with Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs about this at Laughlin a couple of years ago, they agreed that more than likely this was the aliens' way of adjusting to the researchers in the field. Because, you know, we've been looking for missing time cases, and that's a cue that you're an abductee. Well, they decided that, well, we don't need to give them missing time. We'll just take them and phase them out of time. I'll give you a quick example. Got a couple that is they're abductees. Talked to Darrell Sims about this particular case as well. Had seen these people, this is a couple of years back, we had seen these people that night. We'd all gone out to dinner and stuff, and they were well-shaved. He was clean-cut. His legs were shaved, and so on and so forth. You know, standard going out to have dinner. Next morning, I get a phone call. Well, Joe, we got abducted last night. I'm like, well, how do you know you got abducted last night? You know, come on. What was it that made you think you got abducted last night? Well, come over and see for yourself. Now, y'all see my beard. He had a beard like this. She had enough hair on her legs that I could have put a toupee on my head from it. Now, ladies, y'all know, I mean, you don't get that much hair on your legs. You got to go quite a few weeks to get that kind of hair. And any guy who has a beard knows you're not getting a full beard that's down past your chin unless it's 3 or 4 weeks old. So for us, we realized that these people had been taken out of time for probably 3 weeks, maybe 2 to 3 weeks, and then put back. And put back before they were physically taken. Figure that one out. Now, how can you be put back before you've been taken? There seems to be this little 10 or 15 minute phase in there where that you're still on board the ship when you're actually being put back. Don't ask me, I'm not a physicist. I did talk to Michio Kaku about this, and he does agree that with the right time traveling ability, it can be done. But I am not a physicist. I do have degrees in avionics and electronics, but he's the physicist. I'm not. I've actually talked to Neil deGrasse Tyson about this and Dr. Paul Levesque as well. And they all agree that this could be done if you understood time travel and you had the equipment. But they all agree that our government, we do not possess this level of technology, no way, no how, probably won't for quite some time. So I found that interesting that they changed the way they did things. Now, at first we thought maybe they were doing that to keep the government from finding these contactees. Then I noticed the government tried to do something similar without actually shifting time. The government tries, a lot of times they'll implant memories to make the contactee think they were in a particular place. Maybe out having dinner with a friend, or maybe at an amusement park, or maybe at a movie or a theater or something along that lines. What I find interesting, like one lady I was talking to, she said, I kept having this image of this movie. It was Night of the Living Dead. And she said, you couldn't pay me money to watch that movie. She said, I can guarantee you I did not get in my car and drive out to see this movie. It was not going to happen. So she realized at the moment, if she thought it was alien, under regression, come to find out, it was the military. And actually, it was a pretty rough experience she had. They were pretty rough on her because I guess she wasn't cooperative as she would like. And the government does sometimes use physical force to get their way. And I use the word government loosely because, like I said earlier, this is not Obama's government. Okay, whether or not he would allow it, I'm not even going to speculate on. But I can tell you from knowing George Bush and all the way back to Reagan that it's not the actual president's government doing this. And I can tell you that maybe 20 to 40 years ago, the military may have played some role in this. But today, this organization stands separate from everybody. They, like I said, they don't seem to have any fear of any repercussions at all. None. They're not scared that the government's going to come get them. They're not scared that the military. They're not even scared that the aliens are going to come get them. And you got to wonder, what do they possess that they don't fear anybody? There's got to be some kind of technology or something they possess that they actually don't fear somebody coming to get them. All I can do is hope that one day the aliens decide to abduct them and give them a piece of what everybody else has been experiencing. And then we say, well, you know what? You were abducted by aliens. Now let us military abduct you for a while, buddy. And, you know, they actually do have a sense of humor. I will tell you that because I have been a smart A a few times with them and some of the other contactees I have talked to as well. And sometimes they will laugh. They will like, well, you know, you're here. This is what's going to happen. This is what we're going to do to you. And you might as well just deal with it. And they'll start laughing at you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, well, you're real sweet, aren't you? Thank you very much. But it's important because, like I said about Betty and Barney Hill, it establishes that when, like when they were telling her, you know, just come on and go to the ship and get it over with so we can put you back in your car and let you go. It establishes this is government. This isn't an alien. An alien is not going to tell you that. Matter of fact, as far as I know, I have never heard a contactee describe an alien as speaking English, not at least verbally. So I kind of wonder, you know, Betty and Barney Hill both say the same thing, under hypnosis, that they spoke English with an accent. Not sure what the accent was, but they definitely spoke English. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And that to me is crucial, because when it comes to the Greys, the humans, and the reptilians, they're all telepathic. And when dealing with contactees, they deal with them in a telepathic form. And for several reasons. One, it's easier to communicate with them. It's much faster. But they can actually semi-control a contactee through telepathic means. So, and in the Greys' case especially, they keep a presence with contactees nonstop, all the time. Nonstop, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Unless you happen to hit a null zone, which there are a few in the country, you never lose contact with them, ever. And I guess that's how they know sometimes that a contactee's in trouble with a military abduction, because I've always wondered about that. Why would the Greys just show up all of a sudden and stop something? Well, it's because they do know. They can feel what the contactee is going through. What most people don't understand about the Greys is they do have emotions, and they can sense and feel what you sense and feel. And this is another weird thing. People forget the Greys have a very long lifespan. More than likely, your mother, your grandmother, your great-grandmother, your great-great-grandmother, and so on and so forth, are being abducted by the same Grey that you are. That's not a different Grey. It's the same one. We handle generational cases for ICAR, along with Daryl Sims. Actually gives a little hand with this every once in a while. But we have cases 5 and 6 generations. They're all being abducted by the same Grey. And when you read ledgers and journals from their grandmothers and their great-grandmothers, they were being abducted by the same Grey. One of the things I found interesting about that, too, especially in some of my older contactees, a lot of them, I know a lot of y'all are familiar with spirit guides. A lot of times they will tell me that an Indian or something along those lines comes and talks to them on a regular basis. Most of them have realized now when they push the issue, it turns out to be a Grey. It's kind of a way of them kind of guiding you along without actually scaring the living daylights out of you. And it works quite well. I got a lot of friends in Sedona that argue with me about this all the time, but when you regress an individual, that's what you find. It's there, it's clear, it's cut and dry, there's no doubt about what memories were there and what memories weren't there. So, you know, these are all things we've learned over the years that I just find interesting, and it helps us to understand why the government would want to abduct anybody, for that matter. And they really do. They want to know what the aliens are doing here. People ask me all the time, what are the aliens doing here? Well, I'll tell you what, I don't talk about it. And reason why is about 3 years ago, about 4 years ago, I was hosting a show called Wake Up USA. I forgot who was on. I think it was Alfred Weber. And we got into the alien agenda conversation. Now, first thing was weird. The phone lines went down about every 15 minutes. We figured harassment. What the hell, it happens sometimes. Couple of days later, I own a construction company. I'm working in New Orleans. We're doing some roof work. I'm out there with about 9 or 10 guys. I'm standing up on the roof watching these guys' latest new roof, and a white SUV pulls up with tinted windows. Two guys get out in gray Armani suits. I mean gray too. Armani, though. Very expensive suits, but gray. Gets out of the car, looks up at the building, and goes. And I look down and say, who got in trouble? All right, which one of you guys is the law here for? Because they obviously look like, oh, I mean, FBI, something like that. I said, well, who is it? They're all looking at me like, that ain't us, it ain't us. So I said, well, I'm going to go find out. I go down the ladder. I go over there, walk up. The guy says, how you doing? Introduces himself, doesn't tell me his name. Opens his jacket enough that I can see the 9mm sitting on his coat, inside of his jacket. And I kind of looked at him. I said, what can we do for you? Because I really figured he was there to pick somebody up. I really did. He said, well, you know, Joe, I wanted to tell you that we endorse what you're doing up to the alien agenda. He said, at that point, you're going to have to quit. And I just kind of laughed. I don't take well to intimidation. And I said, it's not going to happen. I'm still going to keep talking about it, and that's all it is. He said, well, you know, you and your wife take a lot of trips. Your son's home alone by himself a lot of times. She says she's on the road by herself sometimes when she's going to classes and stuff. And I'm like, okay, you made your point. Now, you're going to threaten my family. We'll back off the alien agenda. And I did. I actually did. Stayed off of it for a couple of years. Made a mistake. I was talking with Richard Dolan one night. Made the mistake of bringing it back up. We were driving to a casino, going gambling, weren't doing anything alien-related. And I noticed there was a white SUV following the car. And we got to talking, Linda and I started laughing, and I said, well, let's see if it's anything, anything at all. Because there was something odd that had happened earlier that night. We had seen a guy standing in the middle of the road in white shorts and a white shirt. And you got to understand, the road between New Orleans and Gulfport, Mississippi is swamp. There's nothing out there. It's just all swampland. It's just all it is. And I just thought it was odd. It didn't stop or anything. He didn't look like he was in distress or anything. And I just thought it was odd. It was early in the morning. It was 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. And I just thought it was odd. This guy was out there in white shorts. Looked like a very comfortable man, probably fairly well off. Not sure what it meant. Then all of a sudden, here comes this SUV. Starts following us. We start talking. And, of course, I started saying things. And I said, well, we're just going to go up to NASA and hang out. And we're not going to go to the casino. So I kicked it down about 75. And he kind of backed off, and right as there's a split in the road, and I just hung it to the right real fast, got all sideways and stuff. He zipped the road, but as soon as he passed the road, he locked up his brakes, threw it in reverse, and turned around. And now, like I said, there's nothing out there. There's nobody else out there but us. There's nothing anywhere for miles out there. So I'm thinking, well, maybe he missed the road, you know? I said, maybe he just missed the road, and he's coming back. So I kicked the car up to about 85. Which I shouldn't probably be telling y'all, but anyway, I get to the casino, park the car, I'm getting out the car. We're on level 3. I'm smoking at the time. I don't smoke anymore, but at the time I was smoking at it. I went to throw my cigarette over the balcony, and lo and behold, what was on the one below us? There he was standing there just laughing at me. I was like, well, thank you very much. And basically, he was telling me that was a warning. Back off the alien agenda. I don't think the government knows any more than we do when it comes to the alien agenda, and I really don't think they want us talking about it with the general population, because a lot of researchers paint this as two ways. Either they're here to destroy us or they're here to help us. And in fact, they're not here for either one. They're not. They've been here probably 10, 15, 20,000 years. They're in this for themselves, especially the Greys. Are in this for themselves. They're not here to enlighten our species, and they're not here to wipe our species out. Let's be honest. Like I said earlier, if they wanted to wipe our species out 6,000 years ago, they could have done it with a blink of an eye. And today, even today, I mean, come on, they shut down nuclear missile facilities. It would be nothing for them to take us out, even in today's society. So for me, I don't really think they're here to destroy us. I really don't think they're here to help us. I think they need something from us, along with some other stuff they probably need from some other places, and that's what they're here for. Because if they were going to monitor our society, 6,000 years is plenty enough time to do that. I mean, they could have watched us the whole entire time through through the Crusades all the way up to nuclear war until what we're doing today. And it just doesn't seem like that's what they're up to. It does kind of bother me at that point that that's what they're doing. So, guys, I know we've got to get out of here in a few minutes because, what is it, 7:30? Oh, yeah, honey, y'all got to go getting drinks and stuff. But there was some more stuff I wanted to cross, but I promised Steven I would not run us over any more than we were. One more thing, and then I'm going to let y'all get out of here, and I do appreciate y'all sitting here and listening to this. Let me drive. Oh, a couple of references, and I'm not going to get into them, but I'll let y'all check these out. In Captured, page 79, page 81, page 85, and page 128, I would ask y'all just to read them, and you'll understand more of why we think Betty and Barney Hill were Millabs and not alien abductees. There are some comments in there about some of the stuff that happened to them. There's also some mention about their FBI and CIA and Air Force military contact. I really didn't think we were this long, guys. I really didn't. I thought we still had 15 or 20 minutes to go here. I guess I shouldn't have got off on these. There's a bunch more data I wanted to cross, but I didn't think we would get off on some of these stories. So anyway, again, thanks everyone for coming in tonight. And you can catch this on UFO Undercover. A lot of this information is going to be available there. Thank you.